going to hell down here in Texas.
What is up, everybody? It's your boy, the Triple B, Big Bad Bob, otherwise known as Rob Clark, here with you for another exciting edition of the Lone Gunman Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about some various inconsistencies that I've found in the various reportings of certain instances going on here. Involving the assassination. So, but before we get into that, let's hear a word from our sponsors, Silk City Hot Sauce. Big Bad Bob here with you for Silk City Hot Sauces. Why Silk City? Because this hot sauce comes to you directly from Paterson, New Jersey, also known as Silk City. These hot sauces are 100% natural, gluten-free, vegan, contain no chemicals, fillers, dyes, or junk. Everything is packed into recyclable glass containers because glass doesn't leach weird flavors into the product. All other hot sauces are sourced in small batches from locally bought fresh peppers. It's all about the pepper, people. Telling you. Your boy, Big Bad Bob, loves his food like he loves his women. Hot and spicy, but not so hot you can't eat them. So, if you love yourself some sauce and you're tired of trying to transform your bland meat into something edible, with the tip of a jar, you will transform your life forever. Head over to silkcityhotsauce.com, place an order, and upon checkout, enter the code GUNMAN, that's G-U-N-M-A-N, for 20% off of your entire order. You won't regret it. Thank me later. Peace. I need to change the tagline to, you won't regret it, but your asshole might. That comes from my buddy Joe. Loving the hot sauce, baby. Once again, thank you. For all of you out there putting orders in for it and hoping to support the show, it is greatly appreciated, just so you know. All right, so starting off this episode, we're going to call back to the last episode when we were trying to figure out how the Dallas police, or the FBI, for that matter, knew to go to 1026 North Beckley so soon after Oswald's arrest. And in some instances, before he was even arrested, okay, at the Texas Theater, according to some sources. So the document I was looking for, I finally found it. And this is the official, okay? This is the official Dallas police record of searches and seizures. Okay? Now, according to the official police, Dallas police record, 1026 North Beckley, specifically Oswald's room, was searched by Officer Turner, Potts, Moore, and Sinkle on 11-22-63. Based on search warrant 295 issued by Judge Dave Johnston, searched at 3 p.m. See attached list of property taken. Okay. Now remember, according to various sources, including Earlene Roberts and A.C. Johnson, police were there, at least according to Earlene Roberts, half an hour, 45 minutes after Oswald left his rooming house. So this is before Tippit even supposedly got killed. This is before he even got arrested at the Texas Theater. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is after Tippit got killed. What am I thinking? Sorry. But this is before he was even arrested at the Texas Theater. And according to the official story, the police did not know about 1026 North Beckley until Sheriff Decker's men, who had been sent to 2515 Fifth Street in Irving, that'd be Ruth Payne's residence. And it was there that they either, well, there was three different versions of the story, but apparently there was an address book there. And there was a number for Oswald's rooming house, and they performed a crisscross search where they figured out the address of the phone number. Okay, which brings us to the next official. Searches and seizures. 2515 Fifth Street, Irving, Texas. Searched at 3:30 p.m. by Stovall, Rose, and a damn chicken. Information of owner, see attached list of property taken. Now, there is no search warrant listed here. So pretty much, I mean, I'm guessing they saying they got consent from Ruth Payne to search, but without a search warrant, anything they collected at Ruth Payne's probably wouldn't have been admissible in court. But again, according to their official story, Ruth Payne's residence wasn't searched until 3:30 p.m., but the Beckley Street rooming house was searched at 3 p.m. And they had to call Dave Judge Johnston, and he had to issue a search warrant, and they had to pick it up, and they had to take it there. So you're telling me that given the fact that even if they were fast at doing this, 2:30 p.m., ten minutes after Oswald to sit down in Fritz's interview room, they're off and running. They get a search warrant for 1026 North Beckley. A half an hour before, this rooming house is searched a half an hour before Ruth Payne's house is even searched, where they allegedly found the address. So how does that work? Don't know. And again, 2515 Fifth Street, Irving, Texas, Miss Payne's residence, searched by H.M. Moore, Stovall, and Rose when they left it to 2363. This time, a warrant was issued by Judge Joe Brown Jr. Officer McCabe of the Irving PD also present, and this search happened at 1230 p.m. See list attached. So, again, this stuff doesn't make sense. The timing doesn't make sense. And then at the very bottom, no date given, it states officers obtained a search warrant for 1026 North Beckley a second time and no recovery, which means they didn't take anything or find anything that was on the search warrant. And again, no date given for that. Interesting. Interesting. And remember how all this went down. So, as we have here, Texas School Book Depository, 1240 p.m., Homicide and Robbery Bureau officers assisting in search were Captain Fritt, Sims, Boyd, Johnson, Turner, Sinkel, some of the same guys who searched the 1026 North Beckley there, Montgomery, and Monahan. See attached list of property taken. Chief Lumpkin and other officers completed search of other floors. So, after it was determined that the whoever, that the school book depository had been the source of the shots, and it was actively being searched, Captain Will Fritz went down to the school book depository and was there while it was being searched. He was there when the shells were found. He was there when the gun was found and all that jazz. And then word came in that Officer Tippett had been killed in Oak Cliff. And in the course of his investigation, you know, according to the official story, you know, he got with Roy Truly, the building administrator, who told him that pretty much the only one who hadn't been present for a roll call after the assassination was Lee Oswald. So they pulled his application and figured out the address on there was 2515 West 5th Street, Irving, Texas, which is Ruth Payne's address. Now, Fritz wanted to go there. He started to assemble a team to go there, but then got a call from Sheriff Decker, Sheriff Bill Decker. So he went to meet with Sheriff Bill Decker. And afterwards decided not to go to Irving himself, but send Stovall, Rose, and the damn chick in his place. Now, what was said at this meeting, I don't know. But anyway, this leads us back to, okay, now Fritz is staying in Dallas. So he is there when Oswald is brought into headquarters there in his little interrogation room. Now, at some point that day, they had established who had been working on the sixth floor as part of the floor-laying crew headed by TSBD supervisor Bill Shelley, William Shelley. He was heading up a crew up there of people replacing the floor on the sixth floor. This included Charles Givens, Danny Arcee, Billy Lovelady, Bonnie Ray Williams, and a couple others. Now, these individuals were arrested, if you want to call it, or detained or taken downtown. And we have pictures of this. From William Allen, the day when you see Bill Shelley, Danny Arcee, Bill, or Bonnie Ray Williams and, getting stuffed in the back of a cop car. We have pictures of Billy Lovelady at the station as Oswald's getting walked by him. So we know these guys were taken in relatively quickly and questioned. We have from that day two affidavits in any fact given by William Shelley. Now, the first one we have states this. Approximately October 10th or 12th, a man by the name of Lee Oswald, a white male, 21, came to work where I do. Now, first of all, Oswald's first day of work was October the 14th, and Oswald was not 21 years old. The time he started, I believe he was 23 when he started, and he had a birthday in October there, so which made him 24 at the time of his death. I was put in charge of him by Mr. Truly to show him what to do. I have been working close with this man since he has been there. This man stayed by himself most of the time and would go for a walk at noontime. So apparently, Oswald would go for a walk or at least leave the building. This was something normal that he did. Lee would bring his lunch and usually eat with us in the lounge and read the paper. He would usually read about politics. So, normally, Lee would come in and eat his lunch with everybody else, and then go for a walk before or leave the building, whatever he was doing, and then come back and resume his work for the rest of the day. Today, I arrived for work at 8 a.m. and went about my usual duties. Lee was already filling some orders just outside my office. I saw him periodically all morning, with the exception of when we were on the sixth floor. So he's saying he saw him all around the building that morning, except the sixth floor. Now, mind you, Bill Shelley and his crew were laying a floor, new flooring, on the sixth floor all morning. At noon, I started eating my lunch in my office, and I went outside to see the president. After the president's accident, I started checking around, and I missed Lee. I asked Mr. Truly about him, and he told me that he hadn't seen him either. I didn't see Lee until the police brought him into the police homicide bureau. So he's telling you Bill Shelley is at the police station when, after Oswald's arrest, he was brought in to the police homicide bureau. Excuse me. Now, his second affidavit in any fact, given on November 22nd, 1963, says thus. Today, at approximately 12:30 p.m., November 22nd, 1963, I was standing on the front steps at 411 Elm watching the president in the parade. The president's car was about halfway from Houston to the Triple Underpass when I heard what sounded like three gunshots. I couldn't tell where they were coming from. All right. Now, you're standing on the front steps of a building where five floors above you, 50 feet above you, supposed rifle shots are coming out of the building and into Dealey Plaza. You have no idea where they were coming from. Okay. Okay. He then says, I ran across the street to the corner of the park and ran into a girl crying, and she said the president had been shot. This girl's name is Gloria Calvary, who is an employee of the same building. Okay. Now, so after the shots, Kelly knew that they were gunshots. He ran across the street. Now, folks, I've been to the School Book Depository in Dallas. I've been to Elm Street. I've been on the front steps. I've been across the street. Now, how did this lady, Gloria Calvary, know that the president had been shot? Bill Shelley is seemingly clueless as to what happened, other than the fact that he heard three gunshots. Okay. Next, he says, I went back into the building and went inside and called my wife and told her what happened. Okay? This contradicts the Warren Commission version of events, where it states that after the shots, he hooked up with Billy Lovelady and went to the rail yard to investigate. He doesn't mention that here in his affidavit in any fact. Not at all. In fact, this is a shockingly different version of events than how the Warren Commission paints what Bill Shelley Billy Lovelady did that day, because they had to somehow discredit Vicki Adams' testimony. Okay? He said, I went back to the building and went inside and called my wife and told her what happened. There's no way you can confuse that with I hooked up with Billy Lovelady and we walked down to the rail yard to see what happened and then came back around the building and came in the back door. No. That doesn't make sense. Okay. Then he says, I was on the first floor then and I stayed at the elevator and was told not to let anybody out of the elevator. Okay. So now we have Bill Shelley stationed by someone at the elevator, the freight elevator, and he was told by somebody not to let anybody out of it. He says, I left the elevator, so he didn't do what he was told to do. He says, I left the elevator and went with the police on up to the other floors. Okay? And here's what he says next, which is really interesting. I left Jack Doherty in charge of the elevator. Okay? And that is Bill Shelley's second affidavit in any fact, given on November the 22nd, 1963. This is immediately after the ship went down. This is immediately after he's taken to the police headquarters in the back of a squad car. This is immediately after. This is fresh in mind. Okay, so unless he has something to hide, then he's not lying here. Okay, now only if he had something to hide, as in if he was a part of this whole mess, would he then have a reason to lie about what he did with Billy Lovelady? But assuming that Bill Shelley is an innocent piece of this puzzle, he has no reason to lie at this point. So this is what he did. I left Jack Doherty in charge of the elevator. Now, according to Fritz's handwritten notes of the Oswald interrogation that he wrote down, a couple of days after the actual interrogation, after Oswald had been killed, you know, he writes down a whole bunch of things. And in the last episode, I said that he did not write down anything about 1026 North Beckley at all. At all. You know, it even says, okay, first interrogation with James Bookout and James Hostie, 11/22/63, 3:15 p.m. Okay, and this is what supposedly, you know, Oswald admitted to doing. Didn't own a rifle. Saw one at building. Mr. Truly and two others. Home by something. Changed britches. Admits going to Russia. Admits writing Russian. Embassy and to Hostie. Says lived in Russia for 3 years. Does write. What's it? Does write over there. Something non-school in Fort Worth to Marines. Says got usual medals. Claims no political belief. Belongs to Fair Play. Claims second floor coke when officer came in to first floor, had lunch, And then out, Bill Shelley in front. Left work, opinion, nothing else to be done that day. And yada, 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 right? Now, in Bookout's notes, which we know that he actually took at 3:15 p.m. at the Oswald interrogation, because it's on the back of one of these affidavit at any fact papers. You can see the bleed through. So he just grabbed whatever he had handy there, which was happened to be affidavit at any fact paperwork, which was likely some kind of a carbon copy paper. We have this on 11:22 at 3:15 p.m. L.A. Joe interviewed by Captain Fritz. Bookout and hostie, Captain something. Oh, Captain Fritz delivered his rights, etc. So apparently, he was read his rights. LHO admitted resided at 1026 North Beckley. That's the first thing that's on the list. That's the first thing that's on the notes. All right. So even if they got this address from Oswald, this interview didn't happen until 3:15 p.m. There were already officers that had a search warrant at 1026 North Beckley by 3 p.m. Okay. You're following the math here, folks. You're seeing what I'm laying down here. Are you picking up what I'm laying down? There's some inconsistencies, some major inconsistencies in what the Dallas police and the FBI are asserting is going on here. So even if they would have immediately stopped the interrogation and Fritz would have got on the horn, I said, hey, we need a search warrant right now. Send a team to 1026 North Beckley. It likely wouldn't have happened until 4 or 5 o'clock, as was mentioned in the last show. Lots of inconsistencies, folks. But in Bookout's report, he states this. Oswald stated he was present for work at the Texas Book Depository on the morning of 11/22, and at noon went to lunch. He went to the second floor to get Coke to eat with lunch and returned to the first floor to eat lunch. All right. Now, this would imply that Oswald got a Coke from the second floor lunchroom before he went downstairs to the first floor to eat lunch. And then went outside to watch the presidential parade. Now, according to the official version of events, Oswald was somewhere during the shots. They don't specify where. And then on the second floor in the lunchroom, he was encountered by Officer Baker and Roy Truly. This is after the assassination has taken place, where Truly supposedly said, oh, don't worry, he works here. Don't worry about him. Okay. But this says something totally different. It says something totally different than Fritz's notes. Now, remember, Fritz's notes were written 2 days after, well, yeah, 2 days after the actual event took place, after Oswald's dead, because he knew that he would likely be questioned about all this stuff. And he wanted to write down things while they were still fresh in his mind. But Bookout made these notes while the interrogation is taking place. So you can kind of can't go back. And in this one, There is no mention of the second floor lunchroom encounter. He says he got a Coke before he went down to the first floor to eat lunch. Okay. Then he says he went outside to watch the presidential parade. And this, folks, is why Bart Camp has done a lot of very important work when it comes to the interrogations, the second floor lunchroom encounter, and the whole idea of prayer man. Right? Because when you really start looking at the inconsistencies in these reports and the likelihood that they had to build a narrative and pin the murder on Lee Oswald, that certain things had to be tweaked a little bit. Just tweaked a little bit. To make it appear that Oswald was on the sixth floor at the time of the shots. They just tweaked things a little bit. They just moved him around like a chess piece on a chessboard to fit the narrative. And sorry, just to correct myself before we move on too much further, these are not bookouts notes that I'm talking about here. This is most of these handwritten notes of the interrogation. I apologize. That you can go find at prayer-man.com. Thank you, and Malcolm Bloom. And to give you an example of what I mean, so on 11/23/63, which is Saturday, day after the assassination, Posty and Bookout prepared a report for the FBI. And it stated this. And this is, of course, based on their notes and their own personal recollections of the interrogation. But here we kind of start to see the narrative turn a little bit, tweak a little bit. So Lee Harvey Oswald, 1026 North Beckley, Dallas, Texas, was interviewed by Captain Will Fritz of the Homicide Bureau. Special agents Hostie and Bookout were present during this interview. When the agents entered the room at 3:15, Captain Fritz had been previously interviewing Oswald for an undetermined period of time. Okay? So, apparently, since Fritz didn't take any notes, we don't know what he had been interrogating Oswald about. Apparently, from the time Oswald came in there, 2:20 p.m. until the FBI arrived at 3:15. So for almost an hour, Fritz had Oswald in there all to himself, not writing down a goddamn thing, apparently. He goes on to say, both agents identified themselves to Oswald and advised him that they were law enforcement officers and anything he said could be used against him. Oswald at this time adopted a violent attitude toward the FBI, and both agents made many uncomplimentary remarks about the FBI. Oswald requested that Fritz remove the cuffs from him. It's being noted that Oswald was handcuffed with his hands behind him. Captain Fritz had one of his detectives remove the handcuffs and handcuff Oswald with his hands in front of him. Fritz asked Oswald if he ever owned a rifle. Oswald stated that he had observed a Mr. Truly, a supervisor at the school book depository, display a rifle on November the 20th from individuals in his office on the first floor, but denied ever owning a rifle himself. Oswald stated that he had never been in Mexico, except in Tijuana on one occasion. However, he admitted to Captain Fritz to having resided in the Soviet Union for 3 years, where he has many friends and relatives of his wife. Right now, why the fuck are they asking Oswald about Mexico? Why are they asking him about Mexico immediately after he's been arrested? How would they even know this? that Oswald supposedly went to Mexico City. Did the FBI know this? It did if they were watching him and he actually went. But again, the FBI is not supposed to operate outside the United States. The CIA is the ones who said that Oswald had been in Mexico City. Now, according to the phone call between J. Edgar Hoover and Lyndon Johnson, Hoover was pissed because he said that the audio tape and pictures of Oswald weren't Oswald, but they said were Oswald in Mexico City. And then all of a sudden they mysteriously lose the audio. That disappears by the wayside. Oh, that got recorded over 15 times. Okay. All right. But back to the matter at hand, what did they even know about Mexico? This soon after Oswald is arrested. How is that even possible? It goes on to say, Oswald also admitted that he was the secretary for the Fair Play for Cuba Committee in New Orleans, Louisiana, a few months ago. Oswald stated the Fair Play for Cuba Committee had its headquarters in New York City. Oswald admitted to having received an award for marksmanship while a member of the U.S. Marine Corps. He further admitted that he was living at 1026 North Beckley in Dallas, Texas, under the name of O.H. Lee. Oswald admitted that he was present in the Texas School Book Depository on November 22nd, where he had been employed since October 15, 1963. Oswald stated that as a laborer, he has access to the entire building, which has offices on the first and second floors, storage on the third and the fourth, as well as the fifth and the sixth. Oswald stated that he went to lunch at approximately noon, and he claimed that he ate his lunch on the first floor in the lunchroom. Okay? However, he went to the second floor, where the Coca-Cola machine was located, and obtained a bottle of Coca-Cola for his lunch. Oswald claimed to be on the first floor when President John F. Kennedy passed the building. Now, that's not what Oswald said. You see how they rearranged things there? What Oswald told him was that he stopped on the second floor to get a Coke, and then he went down to the first floor and had his lunch, which makes sense. Normally, when you are about to have lunch, you get the shit you need to actually eat and drink for your lunch. You wouldn't go past getting a drink to go with your lunch, and instead go to the first floor, eat your lunch, and then go get a drink. That makes no sense whatsoever, right? But that's what they want you to believe. But that's not what he said he did. Here's the first instance of how things are getting tweaked, folks. Tweaked. And then it says Oswald claimed to be on the first floor when President John F. Kennedy passed the building. No, 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 no. That's not what he said. Well, he did say that, but he said he had went to the second floor first, then the first floor to eat his lunch, and then he went out with Bill Shelley in front to watch the presidential parade. Now, why is this important? Why does prayer man matter? If you look at the front entrance of the School Book Depository in 1963, you will notice that there is a set of steps in front leading up to the doorway. There is a metal banister railing in the middle of the steps. Okay? And once you get up to the top of the steps, there is a landing. And then there is a set of double glass doors. Okay? Which lead into a vestibule, which you then go through two more glass doors And so you get into the first floor of the school book depository. Now, maybe Oswald didn't go outside because Bill Shelley doesn't remember seeing him out there. Bill Frazier doesn't remember seeing him out there. Billy Lovelady doesn't remember seeing him out there. Okay? But what if Oswald went into that vestibule, climbed the glass doors instead of going outside? When you're looking at the prayer man image, and you can go back, and I would urge you, there's JFKAssassinationGallery.com, Robin Unger's site, and look up the photos of photographer William Allen. He took many photos throughout that day, and a lot of them were focused on the entrance of the school book depository. And in many photographs, you can see people behind the glass doors in the vestibule pretty damn clearly. I'm not saying you can see their features clearly, but I'm saying you can see visibly that there are people in the vestibule through the glass door. And that on old film, a moving picture, as it's going around the corner, it could capture the presence of a person in that vestibule. But not necessarily the glass, because the glass is invisible. Transparent, you can see right through it. But it would distort the image of the person inside the glass a little bit more than the people if they were actually standing outside. So what if that day Oswald stopped working? He came down, he got a Coke, he went to the first floor, he had his lunch, and then he walked out in the vestibule. And at the time of the shots, the president's going by, he's watching. And then the president gets shot, right? And he's still standing there trying to figure out what happened. And his ghostly image is captured behind this glass in the entrance to the school book depository. Now, from his position, okay, if this is Oswald, he could very well see who's standing on the steps. He could see Bill Shelley. He could see Buell Frazier. He could see Billy Lovelady. Okay? But he doesn't mention anybody but Bill Shelley. Okay? Maybe it's a little too crowded out there for Oswald's liking. So he just stays in the vestibule because he can see from there anyway. So maybe he does go out front with Bill Shelley. Maybe he does go watch the presidential parade or watch the president go by. But this is how they're tweaking it, folks. This is how they're tweaking it. And he says, after hearing what had happened, he said that because of all the confusion, there would be no work performed that afternoon, so he decided to go home. Oswald stated he then went home by bus and changed his clothes and went to a movie. Oswald admitted to carrying a pistol with him to this movie, stating he did this because he felt like it, giving no other reason. Oswald further admitted attempting to fight the Dallas police officers who arrested him in this movie theater when he received a cut and a bone. Oswald frantically denied shooting Dallas police officer Tippit or shooting President John F. Kennedy. This interview was concluded at 4:05 when Oswald was removed for a lineup. So, next up, we have an FBI report, also from November 23rd, concerning another Oswald interrogation. And this time it is by Special Agent Manning Clements. Says this: Lee Harvey Oswald, interviewed in offices of the DPD, was advised that he did not have to make any statement, that any statement he made could be used against him in court, and of his right to an attorney. He was requested to furnish descriptive biographical data concerning himself. The following was obtained from his responses and examination of the contents of his wallet. Excuse me. Oswald declined to explain his possession of a photograph of a Selective Service card in the name of A. Alec James Heidel. When the interview had been substantially completed and Oswald was asked as to his present employment, he stated he thought perhaps interview to obtain descriptive information was too prolonged, and that he had declined to be interviewed by any other officers previously, and did not desire to be interviewed by this agent. He remarked, "I know your tactics. There is a similar agency in Russia. You are using the soft touch, and of course the procedure in Russia would be quite different." Unquote. Oswald was advised questions were intended to obtain his complete physical description and background. Upon repetition of this question as to his present employment, he furnished the same without further discussion. White, male, birthday, October 18, 1939, place of birth, New Orleans, Louisiana. He gave a height as 5'9", 140 weight. Hair, medium brown, wore medium length, needs a haircut. Eyes, blue-gray. Scars, no tattoos or permanent scars. Mother, Marguerite Oswald, unknown address, Arlington, Texas, practical nurse, was not seen for about a year. Father, Robert Lee Oswald, deceased, August 31st, 1939, New Orleans, wife Marina, two infant children, brothers, John Oswald, not John Pike, John Oswald, address unknown. Last known at Fort Worth, Texas, 5 or 6 years ago, age about 30. Works with pharmaceuticals, but not graduate pharmacist. Robert Oswald, 7313 Davenport, Fort Worth, Texas. Wife, Veda. Two small children, works for Brick Company. Believed to be called Acme. Dress at the time of the interview. Black trousers, brown salt and pepper. Long sleeve shirt, bareheaded. Contents of wallet. Has a card in possession. Social Security, Lee Harvey Oswald. Photo of Selective Service System card with photo of Oswald. Notice of classification and name, Alec James Heidel. Card shows classification 4. Bears date, February 5th, 62. Reverse side shows cards from Texas Local Board. Card shows erasures and retyping of this information indicated in Bear's longhand signature of Alec J. Heidel. Signature of member or clerk of local board. Indistinct may be good something. Local board 114, Fort Worth, Lee Harvey Oswald. Social Security number, da da da. Gives his vitals as October 18, 1939. Date of birth, New Orleans, 5'11". 150, blue eyes, brown hair, Ms. Zola Berger, clerk. Snapshot of a woman, apparently the wife. Snapshot photo of infant, presumably daughter. White card with long hand, Embassy USSR, 1609 Decatur, Northwest Washington, Consular Prezieko. DOD identification issued to Lee H. Oswald. Expiration date December 7, 62, private first class. Excuse me. Oh, damn. Ah, sorry, I'm still trying to get over all these allergies. Card shows date of birth October 18th, 5/11/145. So. Dallas Public Library card, undated. Expiration date, December 7, 65. Issued to Lee Harvey Oswald, 602 Elsbeth. School or business, Jaggers Child Stovall, followed by the name Jack Bowen. And it goes on and on of the supposed contents of Lee Harvey Oswald's wallet. 13 bucks, consisting of one $5 bill and 8 $1 bills. Residence, Room in rooming house, 1026 North Beckley for about 5 weeks. Phone number unknown. Because his previous residences and his previous employers back up until Jagger's child, Stovall. And next up, we have a weird report, an FBI report from James Bookout. Now, it's stated on here that the date that this report was typed is 11/25/63. Okay? By now, Oswald's dead. It states that this report was dictated on 11/24/63. And it's also stated on here that this report was taken on 11/22/63. Okay? But it's not dictated until the 24th, and it's not printed and typed until 11/25. Lee Harvey Oswald was interviewed at the Homicide Bureau, Dallas Police Department, by Captain Fritz in presence of Bookout. This is a report from Bookout, by the way. Oswald was advised of the identity and official capacity of said agent and the fact that he did not have to make any statement, that any statement he could make could be used in a court of law against him, and that any statement made must be free and voluntary, and that he had the right to consult with an attorney. Oswald stated that he did not own a rifle. He advised that he saw a rifle day before yesterday at the Texas School Book Depository, which Mr. Truly and two other gentlemen had in their possession and were looking at. Oswald stated that on November 22nd, at the time of the search of the School Book Depository building by a police officer, that he was on the second floor of a building having to purchase a coat from the salting machine, at which time a police officer came into the room with pistol drawn and asked him if he worked there. Mr. Truly was present and verified that he was an employee, and the police officer thereafter left the room and continued through the building. Oswald stated that he then took this coat to the first floor and stood around and had lunch in the employee's lunchroom. Okay? So they want you to believe, okay, that after the assassination, Oswald, apparently oblivious to every fucking thing going on and people running in and out of the building, police officers crawling all over the building, that he doesn't give two flying fucks, that after purchasing his drink, he goes to the first floor to eat his lunch while all this chaos is ensuing. This is what they want you to believe. This is what I mean by things getting tweaked. Inconsistencies, folks. Unbelievable. Incredible inconsistencies. He thereafter went outside and stood around for 5 or 10 minutes with foreman Bill Shelley, and thereafter went home. Now, we know this is a blatant lie, because while Oswald did say that he was out front with Bill Schelling, he meant at the time of the assassination. Not after the assassination, not after he'd gotten his coke on the second floor, not after he supposedly went to the first floor and ate his lunch, and then not at, you know, and then he supposedly went out front with Bill Shelley for 5 or 10 minutes and hung out. This is a blatant lie on James Bookout's part. If this was even remotely true, we would have Lee Oswald on film, captured on film by some of the many, many photographers that were in Dealey Plaza and around the depository after the shots had rang out. If you can imagine the school book depository being like a giant pile of shit, and if you could imagine photographers as being flies that day, they were all over the place. They were snapping pictures all over the place. So by the time the assassination had occurred, Okay. By the time Oswald was getting his coat, and by the time he had sat down on the first floor to eat his lunch, and by the time he'd stood around for 5 or 10 minutes out front with Bill Shelley. The building would have been in lockdown mode. He would have been just like everybody else there, wondering what the hell happened. But I digress. He stated that he left work because, in his opinion, based upon the remarks of Bill Shelley, he did not believe there was going to be any more work that day due to the confusion in the building. He stated after arriving at his residence, he then went to a movie, where he subsequently was apprehended by the Dallas Police Department. Now we know all this is whack, okay? Because you don't just take a gun to a movie theater, okay? And Oswald's movements, if it's Oswald at the rooming house, he's headed in the wrong direction if he's going to the theater. You don't normally go home, change clothes, pack your heat, and go to a movie. It's just not something you normally do. And he was not heading in the direction of the movie theater. All he had to do was go up to the end of Zang's and turn, down Jefferson, and he would have been at the theater. But no, he takes this weird, circuitous route through the residential neighborhoods, and he's actually going in the direction of Jack Ruby's apartment. But I digress. Oswald stated that his hours of work at the schoolbook depository are from 8 a.m. to 4:45 p.m., but that he is not required to punch a time clock. His usual place of work in the building is on the first floor. However, he is frequently required to go to the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh floors of the building in order to get books. This was true on November 22nd, and he had been on all of the floors in the performance of his duties on November 22nd, 1963. Remember, Bill Shelley said he did not see him on the sixth floor that day at all. So there's that. Now we move on to 11/23/63. Okay. Another FBI report by James Bookout, and another instance of him not filing this report until 11/25/63. Dictated on 11/24/63, and the interrogation allegedly took place on 11/23/63. So, this other report, I'm about to read you from James Bookout again, not official until the day after Oswald is shot and killed. Lee Harvey Oswald was interviewed by Captain Fritz of the Homicide and Robbery Bureau, Dallas Police. Oswald was advised of the identity of Special Agent Bookout and his capacity as a special agent of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He was informed of his right to an attorney, that any statement he might make could be used against him in a court of law, and that any statement which he might make must be free and voluntary. He furnished the following information in the presence of Thomas Kelly of the U.S. Secret Service, David Grant, Secret Service, Robert Nash of the U.S. Marshals, and Detectives Billy Sankle and Faye Turner of the Homicide Bureau in Dallas Police Department. Okay, so by this time, at least I think during, it was only during the very first interrogation of Oswald that James Hostie was present. And given the supposed relationship and hatred that Oswald had for Hostie, allegedly, and the fact that Hostie was investigating Oswald or his wife, whichever you want to believe, before the assassination, they made the decision to yank Hostie from any further interrogation. That's why you'll notice the last two have been done by themselves, or at least by James Buchan himself. So let us continue. Following his departure from the school book depository, Oswald said he boarded a city bus to his residence and obtained a transfer upon departure from the bus. He stated that officers, at the time of arresting him, took his transfer out of his pocket. Yeah, you heard me right, folks. Where is the taxi cab ride? We'll get there, I promise. Oswald then advised that he had only one post office box, which was in Dallas, Texas, which he had opened under the fake address of 3601 North Beckley, which did not exist. He denied bringing any package to work on the morning of November 22, 1963. He stated that he was not in the process of fixing up his apartment, and he denied telling Wesley Frazier that the purpose of his visit to Irving on the night of November 21st was to obtain curtain rods from Reeve Payne. Oswald then stated that it was not exactly true, as recently stated by him, that he had rode a bus from his place of employment to his residence on November 22, 1963. He stated actually he did board a bus at his place of employment, but after that, about a block or two due to traffic congestion, he left the bus and rode in a city cab to his apartment on North Beckley. He recalled that at the time of getting into the cab, some lady looked in and asked the driver to call her a cab. He stated that he might have made some remarks to the cab driver merely for the purpose of passing the time of day at that time. He recalled his fare was about 85 cents. He stated that after arriving at his apartment, he changed his shirt and trousers because they were dirty. He described his dirty clothes as being a reddish-colored long-sleeve shirt with a white or with a button-down collar and gray-colored trousers. He indicated that he had placed these articles of clothing in the lower drawer of his dresser. So Oswald's telling them he wore a reddish-colored long-sleeve shirt with a button-down collar and gray trousers to work. He says he indicated he had placed these articles of clothing in the lower drawer of his dresser, which is true. These were recovered from 1026 North Beckley. If you go look at the photos of the exhibit, Oswald stated that Mrs. Payne receives no pay for keeping his wife and children. He stated that their presence in Mrs. Payne's residence is a good arrangement for her because of her language interest, indicating that his wife speaks Russian and Mrs. Payne is interested in the Russian language. Oswald denied keeping a rifle in Mrs. Payne's garage at Irving, Texas, but stated that he did have certain articles stored in her garage consisting of two sea bags, a couple of suitcases, and several boxes of kitchen articles, and also kept his clothes at Mrs. Payne's residence. He stated that all the articles in Mrs. Payne's garage had been brought there about September of 63 from New Orleans. Oswald stated that he has had no visitors at his apartment on North Beckley. He stated he has no receipts for purchase of any guns and has never ordered any guns, and does not own a rifle, nor has he ever possessed a rifle. Oswald denied he is a member of the Communist Party. Oswald stated that he did purchase a pistol, which was taken off of him by police officers on November 22, 63, about 6 months ago. He declined to state where he had purchased it from. So he does admit to buying a handgun, but not a rifle. Oswald stated that he arrived July 62 from the USSR and was interviewed by the FBI in Fort Worth. He stated he felt they overstepped their bounds and had used various tactics in interviewing and surveilling him. He further complained that on interview of Ruth Payne by the FBI regarding his wife, he felt that his wife had been intimidated. Oswald stated that he desired to contact Attorney Abt, ABT, in New York City, indicating that Abt was the attorney who defended the Smith Act case in 1949. He stated he does not know Attorney Abt personally. Fritz advised Oswald that arrangements would be made immediately whereby he could call Attorney Abt. Oswald stated that prior to coming to Dallas from New Orleans, he had resided at a furnished apartment in 4706 Magazine Street, New Orleans, Louisiana. While in New Orleans, he had been employed by William B. Riley Company, 640 Magazine Street in New Orleans. Oswald stated that he has nothing against President Kennedy personally. However, in view of the present charges against him, he did not desire to discuss this phase further. Oswald stated that he would not agree to take a polygraph without the advice of counsel. He added that in the past he has refused to take polygraph examinations. Interesting. I wonder where this was. Oswald stated he's a member of the American Civil Liberties Union and added that Ruth Payne was also a member. With regard to Selective Service card in the possession of Oswald, bearing a photograph of Oswald and the name of Alex James Heidel, Oswald admitted that he carried the Selective Service card but declined to state that he wrote the signature of Alec J. Heidel appearing on same. He further declined to state the purpose of carrying same or any use he has made of same. Oswald stated that an address book in his possession contains the names of various Russian immigrants residing in Dallas whom he had visited with. Oswald denied shooting Kennedy on November 22nd and added that he did not know that Governor John Connally had been shot as well and denied any knowledge concerning this incident whatsoever. So there you have it, folks, how they want to tweak things, how they want to frame this narrative, and they wait until he's dead to do it. Or he can't say any different. They bury these original notes for 30 or 40 years, and it's only by happenstance that we get them, where we can actually start to learn the truth and piece things together and see how things actually supposedly happen, where it makes sense, and not this convoluted mess of horse shit where nothing makes sense. So, take that with you. Take that with you home. Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
From Dallas, Texas, the
Once
flag
again, it's
flying
been
over the statue
real.
of President
A
Kennedy
pleasure.
outside at
Make sure you go to
1:30 p.m.
silkcityhotsauce.com and place an order.
Eastern
Enter the
Standard
code
Time,
GUNMAN at checkout for 20%
15
off
minutes ago.
of your entire purchase. It will help support the show. Follow along on TikTok and Twitter at TheLoneGunman7. On Facebook, the Lone Gunman Facebook page, YouTube, the Lone Gunman podcast channel. Make sure you like and subscribe. Only a couple away from 1,000. Help a brother out. Till next time, folks. The boy, the triple B, Big Bad Bob, and I'm out.
Yeah. Kennedy apparently shot him yet. He fell face down in back seat of his car. Blood was on his head. Mrs. Kennedy cried, "Oh no!"
Presidency.